We can do a mic test while I get my tea ready. Does that sound okay? There we go. I can't talk very loud this evening. I don't know, and I don't know how long, but we'll try. I've been sick. On Sunday, I couldn't talk. My voice just went away. Have any of you been sick this winter? Nobody's been sick. I don't believe it. Yeah. I saw you. Were you sick, Charles? What did you have? You coughed. What did you do for it? You drank tea. Excellent. I think I'll do that right now. Well, I tried a bunch of things. I've been eating garlic, a lot of garlic. I know, it's awful, but if you can't talk, you can't tell stories, and I was getting desperate. Yeah, well, there's a lot of things we can do to get this right, and I don't know, I've got a little too much ring back here. We'll get that right. Maybe if I drink a little tea, it'll be perfect. There's a lot of things we can do to get better when we're ill, when we're diseased, when we're sick. And there's a lot of different ways we get sick. I was sick in my throat, and I still am, but there are other parts of people that get sick as well. Like, let's see, maybe my leg hurts and I can't walk. I could talk just fine, or my wrist hurts a lot these days. It's because I'm getting old, but it's also being sick. And so when I want to pull a wrench, it hurts and I can't pull. I have to get Anthony to pull on it. That's what I have to do, yeah. So there's a lot of things we can do. And there's a couple of stories I have this evening that are going to have to do with people who are sick. And you're going to need to listen carefully here, because I got some criticism. Somebody told me that the stories I tell children go over their heads. And so in order to guard against too much of that, we're going to ask some questions after each story just to see if it goes over your head or not. Is that fair? And then we can report back. Truly happened. I mean... I was told, this is really odd, I was told that the children only enjoyed it because I was being overdramatic, and also he didn't think that Jesus would tell stories like that. And you try to listen. I'm always glad when I get feedback. You know, I want people to be engaged and feel when I'm telling stories. Well, this man was sitting pretty far back, and he really felt it. So I've been thinking about that a little bit. So I'm going to talk about two things in general, and I'm going to hook some stories onto it, and it'll be good for children, but I think for other people, well, big children and little children, both. The one thing I've been thinking about is I've been thinking about Advent, and I've been thinking about Christmas, and I know that's all past, but you know what's coming up next? There's another important holiday coming up, yes. Before Easter, in fact, it's going to happen this week. We don't think about it very much, but we call this holiday Epiphany. And some people celebrate it on the 6th of January, and some people celebrate it on the 7th of January, because people who celebrate on the 7th say that the other people, they lost a day somewhere. And so if you're in Egypt, that's a really important day, more important than Christmas. And it's got to do with the way calendars work. But one of the things that we think about in the West here on Epiphany is we think about the wise men coming to look for Jesus and finding him. And that's a wonderful thing. So, those wise men came over 2,000 years ago, and they found the baby Jesus lying in a manger. And we remember that on the 6th or the 7th of January. But you know what we can do even now? We can look for Jesus even today. And we can find him in our hearts sometimes, if we're lucky or blessed. And the other thing we can do is we can be looking for when Jesus will return again the second time. So those are wonderful things for us to think about as we think about the wise men coming and finding Jesus in the manger. Stories, I'm just going to talk a little tiny bit about stories. Stories are kind of like the clothes that we put on people, well, put on truth, in order to make so that people can deal with the truth. Like if people, you know, it'd just be too much if we didn't have clothes on, right? And stories are like that. It's the way we clothe truths that might be just too hard to deal with otherwise. And there's symbolism in story, and we're going to have that, and we'll talk about that a little bit. And I think what I'll do is I'll start with a memory when I was 11 years old, and we lived in Wisconsin at that time. Is anybody here 11? I got to remember how big. You're 11. I was 11 years old, and my mom, she always knew where people lived that needed to be visited. And we didn't know how she figured this out. Maybe from Evelyn and LaRue. They were the people from the Rural Bible Crusade who came and loaded us up and took us to summer Bible school. All they did was they came to the door, and my mom just gave us all to them, and they just took us over to Lone Rock every day for 2 weeks. I mean, it could have been like kidnappers, you know. And you know, we learned a lot of verses, and we came back, and, you know, I never won the Bible, but I got little prizes. I wasn't that good at memorizing. I think they told my mom about Helen Pine. And so the next time we went to Madison to get supplies for my mom's bakery, we stopped at an arena halfway there. It was 30 miles. And we knocked on this door of the little house in Arena, just a little town, and a little house, and this little woman came to the door. And I was 11 years old, and I remember she was just my size. She was old, but, you know, older, but she was my size, just right eye to eye. And we all stared at her because her one side was, like, much smaller than her other side. And she had this beautiful dress with flowers and everything, but she, like, her shoulder was about as high as the top of her head. And this shoulder was way down here, and she wore a really tall platform shoe on this side and none on the other. And she could just kind of totter up to the door, and she was like, "Oh, it's so nice to see you." She didn't even know who we were. "Come in." And so she opened the door, and we just came in, because that's what you do when you go visit somebody, right? And so in we came, and we all kind of lined up there. I was the oldest. And she was like, "Oh, so Leroy, how old are you? And you're in sixth grade. Oh, that's wonderful. So what are you doing?" And then she talked to my sister Rose and everybody, and we sang a song because that's what we always did. And we, you know, like, but she acted like it was really nice and smiled and complimented us. And then it was time to go because we had to go do our stuff. And she went over to her desk. And her desk was kind of a narrow, tall affair. And on the one side, it had a glass door that opened. And there were shelves there. And there were these shiny little ballerinas in there. And there were glass unicorns, all sparkly and shiny, you know, and graceful. And their feet were the same size and everything. And over here on this side, she opened this little desk. And she rustled around in there. And she got her purse out. It was a black purse, about this big. She ran in there. And she got our little wallet, and she rustled a dollar bill out, and she and my mom said, "Here, this is something for you to go get ice cream on the way home." We were so impressed with Helen Pine. Ice cream, yes! And we stopped, and we each had, like, you could get, a dollar would buy like 6 ice cream cones back then. It was like less than 20 cents a piece. We loved Helen Pine because she gave us the dollar for ice cream.
But we also learned something, and it was just so strange. Here was this person who could barely walk, and she lived all alone, and she was just the happiest, most cheerful person we'd ever met. And then when we would complain, you know, I don't want to do the dishes, it's Roseanne's turn, you know, that kind of thing. I would say, you know, I'll bet Helen Pine would really like to be able to do dishes as well as you can. That's what my mom would say, that kind of thing. We'd stop there almost every time we'd go to Madison, and we'd talk to her, and she always rustled in there and give us a dollar bill. Who was that fun? Wonderful memory I have of that. She was so grateful for us stopping in, and she just shone that gratefulness to us again. So that's a little story there. We'll just leave it for now. And we'll do another story that has something to do with gratefulness and with health. And this one, it's a different story. It happened a long time ago and far away, where you didn't just have your breakfast like you open the refrigerator and get out eggs, you know, and bacon. You didn't do that back then. They didn't have a refrigerator. You'd go out in the woods and you'd look around to see where your food was because you were hungry. This man was looking around for food, and he was out in the woods, and he was far away from here, when he heard something rustling in the underbrush, and he looked back, and through the underbrush, he saw orange and black stripes. That looked like a tiger to him, and he started moving a little faster. And the tiger, he could see in the distance, was sniffing his tracks. The tiger was looking for breakfast, too. That was disturbing, and so he started running, and the tiger running too, and finally they were running as fast as they could go. And all of a sudden, he kind of broke through the trees, and there was this sheer cliff. What are we going to do? The tiger was just ready to leap on him. He leaped off the cliff, and he grabbed a vine, and he slid down just far enough so the tiger could not reach out and get him with his big claws. Just out of room, and the tiger just stared there at him, and he was thinking, you know, I'll get you, I'll get you. Well, the man was huffing and puffing, and he'd forgotten all about eating, so he was just worried about tigers eating him. And so he thought, well, I can slide down this vine. He looked down, it was way too far, and the vine didn't reach. And furthermore, there was another tiger down at the bottom, and it was looking up at him, was licking his chop, and it was swishing his tail. Ooh, he didn't like that. He held on tightly, looked at the sheer cliff. There was just nothing to get a hold of. It was really smooth. And then he looked up to see how the vine was attached. There was this huge oak tree, and it was wrapped around this branch. And as he was looking at that, he saw a mouse. It was a little white mouse, as light as day. And it came walking along on that branch, right out to his vine, where he was hanging on, and here was a tiger. And that little mouse went, and he took a bite out of his vine. Hey, that's my vine. The mouse didn't say anything, just turned around and went back. And soon he saw another mouse. This one was dark. It was as dark as night. And he came walking out right there, took another bite, turned around and went back. He was like, hey, this is not good. It's a big vine, but if those mice keep doing that, it's going to fall off. And I'm going to go with it. There he was. Oh, tiger, mice. And then he remembered what he'd been out of the house for in the first place. He remembered that he was looking for his breakfast. And wow, was he hungry now. Well, what am I going to do? And he looked around, and then he saw in a little crevasse, on this sheer cliff, he saw a little place where some dust had drifted in, and it filled a little pocket there, and a seed had dripped down, and some water, and a little plant had grown up. And it was a little green plant. It was a wild strawberry plant. And he noticed one little strawberry. It was just the size of the tip of my finger, just right here, but it was bright red. And he was able, like holding on to his vine, he could reach way over there, and he could just pluck that little red strawberry. And he put it in his mouth, and he squished it with his tongue. And it was the sweetest, tartest, best strawberry he'd ever eaten in his entire life. Ah, and you know what? That's the end of that story. We just have to leave the guy hanging there on his vine. We're not quite sure why. But you know, I'm going to talk about that just a little bit to make sure that, you know, not all of it goes over everyone's head. I think you, the front people probably all understand this story, but for the ones further back, I'm going to talk about a little bit because it took me 5 years to figure it out. I heard it maybe 6 times in 5 years, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, that's what it is. I realized that was a story about me. That vine is my life. And the white mouse is every day. And the black mouse is every night. And I don't know how many days and how many nights I get, but I know when there's enough of them, my vine's going to tear off and bzhonk, down I'll go. And the tiger will get me. That's the way it works. But you know what? When you know that you just have this much time, you know, from, you know, the first tiger to the last one, then everything that you do is a great privilege and it's wonderful. And the strawberries taste a lot better after you know that, because you know someday there won't be any strawberries and you won't care about it. But right now there's this one wonderful juicy strawberry, and you want to eat that, and you want to turn off your cell phone, and you just want to think about that strawberry and how good it is. And how wonderful it is to be alive. So we're going to shift a little more into sickness here and health and disease and illness and lameness here. And I want to talk just a little bit about back in 2010, I went with some friends. We got tickets and visas and all kinds of stuff. And we got on airplanes and we went all the way to India. And it was a big deal. I know for some of you, you go just all the time and it's kind of tedious, but it was really exciting for me. And I got to India and I don't think, my mouth was just like hanging open for the first couple of days, and I just about twisted my head off. Because you'd be going down the road in a little tiny car, like a taxi, and you might see, you know, a guy with two big water buffaloes hitched to a cart with huge wooden wheels and an enormous pile of sugar cane on that. And he'd just be clomping right down, and you know, on a four-lane highway, making a left turn, and there'd be semis coming this way and Mercedes going this way, and he'd be with his long stick, and you can't steer a water buffalo. They have a ring in their nose, and there's this kind of twine, and they just hook it onto their like yoke thingy. It doesn't make sense to me. Maybe it just reminds them. But this guy, he has this long stick, and he says stuff to them, and they kind of drift over this way, or they drift over this way. And he's on this highway. And, you know, and the most amazing thing, in 2010, he was doing all this, and in his left hand, he had a cell phone, and he was chattering on that. He was walking along. He wasn't even, you know, he was talking, and he was running that thing, making a left turn. I was just totally amazed. That was India that I found. I saw families of six all riding comfortably on a little tiny motorcycle. Yeah, like the people this size would sit on the handlebars on the front with their legs down, you know, by the wheel up here. And the mom would be like over here side saddle, and then, you know, the others would just be kind of draped around. And I don't know if they had bungee cords or how they did it, but they looked like they were perfectly comfortable just going down the road. I think we'd be stopped right away if we tried that here. So I saw amazing things. And one of the best things is I went hiking up into the Himalayas, the mountains. These mountains are really tall. And it was January, but I didn't care. It was my chance. I wasn't going to climb Mount Everest, but I was sure going to climb. And so we went to Dodi Tal, and we climbed, and there were little tracks for a long way, and little tiny villages kind of on the steep mountains, and just kind of people, and they might have one cow. And the cow would be like, they just kind of make a little shelf on the side of the mountain, and the cow would have to sit there, and they have a little lean-to on it. And then the people would take a little rope that didn't look strong enough, and a sickle about this long, kind of curved, and they'd go along the mountain, and the places where the best grass was right where it was the steepest. And they'd tie their little rope on maybe a tree, and they'd kind of get, you know, work their way down there to get one little scoop of grass. And then they'd work that back up, and they'd store the grass in the tree. They'd just take pieces of it, you know, and hang it on the tree. And some of the trees look kind of like a Dr. Seuss story, with just like a haystack in the tree. And it was so that other animals wouldn't come and gobble it all up before they got enough together. And then they would lay down this like big net and put a big bunch of it in there, and then wrap that all up, put it on their backs. And you'd see this person, he'd be going along on the mountain, and it just looked like a haystack with two legs sticking out. And the side would be like brushing against the mountain here, and we'd have to get out of the way on the little path. And they'd take it back, and then they'd feed it to their cow that was on the little shelf under the thing there. And that's how the, because the cow would probably fall right off the mountain if it went out and tried to eat the grass by itself. We climbed, and it was cold, and we had sleeping bags. There was three of us. There were two teachers and me, and they were kind of mountaineers, and I thought I was kind of a mountaineer. And we got up to this place we were headed to, and we thought there was going to be a camp there with some places to stay. Well, the locals had all locked everything up and gone down to a warmer place because it was wintertime, and nobody comes up there in the wintertime, you know. I mean, nobody with any sense. So the only house that was unlocked was the temple of Ganesh. And Ganesh is the elephant god. He has legs like a person and his head's like an elephant with a big trunk. And that wasn't locked. And so we just went in there, and because it was the best shelter we had. Everything else, the snow was about 3 feet deep. And I slept that night in the temple of Ganesh, and nothing bad happened to me. Except when I got up in the morning to put my shoes on, they were frozen solid. They'd been wet the day before, and I couldn't get my feet in there. I had to pound them for a while. But once I got going, we kept on climbing, and we climbed until the snow was so deep we couldn't go anymore. And that was over 14,000 feet high, and it was beautiful, and it was terribly cold, and a lot of fun. And I saw farmers everywhere doing stuff with just little tiny bits and pieces, like maybe they'd be plowing and they'd make their tractor out of parts from a wrecked car, you know, like some wheels here, kind of like Vincent's go-kart, except it actually worked. I mean, it was just amazing. Or maybe the farmer could afford a real tractor, just the tiniest little beat-up tractor. Or maybe they couldn't do that, and they'd have like a white cow, and they'd make the cow pull their little wooden, look kind of like a little scratcher. They called it a plow. But whatever it was, everybody I saw, no matter how little they had, some of their farms were just like as big as like this little corner right here. They were all so pleased to have something to grow stuff on. I thought I'd see people who were complaining and grumpy. I didn't see much of that. Now there were a lot of little boys running around without their parents, and whenever they'd see me, I looked really strange because I was pink and everyone else was brown, dark brown. And so I stuck out like a sore thumb. And I'd go on the train, and the train would stop at the station. I'd get off, because everybody got off. And then little boys would get on, and they'd try to sell you tea, and they'd sell you, you know, little candies. And I'd get off, and immediately a whole group of boys would gather around me, and they'd all have their hands out, and they'd say like this, and they want me to give them some money. And I was told that if I wanted to start a riot, I'd start passing out money. So I didn't want to start a riot. I didn't do that. But I wanted to interact. So you know what I did? I brought out my juggling balls and I'd start juggling. And everybody quit. They put their hands down and they all sat down and they'd sit like this. They all sat cross-legged like this, clunk. Oh, and they'd look at me and I'd juggle. And I like every time the train stopped, I have 200 people all around me and I juggle and we couldn't say a word much that we'd understand of each other. We had a wonderful time. And then the train would start moving just slowly. They didn't say anything. It'd just start moving. And everybody would make a flying leap for the train and jump on it because you didn't want to be left behind. And you just do that from one station to the next. It was wonderful. So that was the way I dealt with the beggars. And there were people, we didn't have, in India, they don't have, they aren't organized to take care of people who are lame and horribly ill. Those people, they just sort of get somebody to bring them over if they can't walk, and they put a piece of cardboard out, and they put them on there, and then they sit there and they beg. And people feel sorry for them. They give them a penny or 2 pennies or something, and maybe by lunch they have enough money to buy some food. And it was kind of hard to deal with that for me. Even though I've seen beggars, it bothered me a little bit, but I kind of got used to it. And, you know, I kind of moved through all that. But then on my way home from India, I heard this most wonderful story. And it was the best story. It didn't happen to me, but it happened to somebody from Akron, Pennsylvania. And I can't remember his name, but I'm going to call him Joe Stolzfus because there's a lot of Stolzfuses in Akron. He was working for MCC, and he'd come over to India, and he was going to this one particular little village, and he was going to meet with the village elders, and they were going to have this wonderful plan, and MCC was going to supply some PVC pipe, and the village elders were going to dig, and they're going to make a dam, and they're going to have this pipe, and they were going to do some flood irrigation, and it was going to be wonderful. So Joe, he had to go organize this. So he thought, well, India, I'm going to go a few days early, and I'm going to look around. Well, I'll tell you, Joe did not know how to juggle. It was a big mistake. Don't ever go to India until you learn how to juggle. And all those little boys would come and beg, and it bothered him, and he gave them some money, and then they all mobbed him, and after a while, he was just completely, you know, he was just distressed, and he was trying to avoid beggars, and he was trying to avoid people sitting on pieces of cardboard, and it was just, it was stressful. He was not having a very good time, and so it was time to meet the elders. And he came to the little village, and as he was walking down the little path to get to the village, up ahead, he saw another one. It was a lame guy, and he was sitting. He was sort of squashed down on a piece of cardboard, and he's, I just can't deal with that. And he went over, kind of on this side of the path, and he was over there. He just didn't even see him. Walked right by. When he got on into the village, he met the village chief, and the village chief met, and they had people. They had people represented from the Christian community, from the Hindu community, and from the Muslim community. And they met with all of them, and they talked about how they were going to bring all the men, and they were going to dig the dam, and then MCC was going to supply the pipe, and then they were going to, you know, have more food to eat, and everybody was going to be happy. Well, that everything worked out just fine. And then, you know, right at the end, the Hindu guy from the Hindus, he said, now, we understand, Joe, that you're Christian. And Joe said, yeah, I am. And he said, and we are told that when Christians pray, God answers their prayer. Yep, that's what we believe. Well, we have a request. We'd like you to pray for somebody. And it's the village chief's son. And you need to know that he was born with something wrong with his feet, and he's never been able to walk in his life. And he sits out by the road and he begs. That's all he can do because he can't work. And you know, Joe was just kind of shrinking down a little bit. And because he was sort of thinking, boy, you know, I don't know if I can deal with this. But he said, yes.
And those village elders and the chief, they took Joe out, back out the way they came, and they stopped right by the young man that he'd walked around him to get away from him coming in there. And Joe told this story. He said, I went up there and I put my hands on that young man's head and I prayed for him. And then I said goodbye to those people and I left. And I don't know what happened to that young man, but I know that God healed one of us that day. And I thought that was one of the best stories I'd ever heard. And I'd been collecting stories every day in India, and here it was just like this dude from Akron, you know. And he gets the best story of all, but I guess it's all right because I can tell it now. So I guess the question I have here, just to make sure that you're with me on this, in case that critic who says that I talk over children's heads is here tonight, I'm going to ask you, so who was this, you know, who was sick in this story? Somebody kind of in the lower than 11 years old. Does anybody in that age group want to guess? Who was sick in the story? Yeah. Do you know who it was? The one who was, the guy who couldn't walk, right? And he had to sit on his piece of cardboard. Yeah, everybody knows he's not well. He's got, you know, like sick, right? But when Joe told the story, he said God healed somebody. Now, who was he talking about? Is anybody maybe a little older? Yeah.
Was he talking about himself?
That's right, because there were just two people there that he was talking about, and he didn't know about the chief's son, the one who was lame, but God healed one of them, so it must have been him. So you must be able to do arithmetic. You can subtract one from two. That's good. Yeah. So was Joe sick? If he got healed, yeah. He wasn't sick physically. Well, what was there something wrong with him? Why did he need to be healed? Can somebody explain that? Anybody in the first couple rows here suggest? I'll just say sometimes our attitudes are a sickness. And the way we see the world is a sickness. And we need healing. And it's wonderful when God sends people to us and shows us how to change our attitudes. And sometimes it's kind of embarrassing, but often when we're embarrassed, that's a good time to notice, because God's probably showing us something really important there. I've got one more story. I think we can squeeze this in. And it's a story I really like. And I've told it a couple of times, and people have asked me, why did you tell that story? And I didn't realize I had to explain myself. That's the difference between like teaching or preaching and storytelling. Storytellers just talk, and then they shut up and sit down, and your job is to figure it out. We don't tell you usually. But maybe we'll talk about that a little bit afterwards, because it's the very story that I got criticized for, and I was kind of twitchy, and I suppose God's trying to teach me something, but still, I like this story. And I like this story because there is a what I call a Christ figure in it. And so you're going to watch for that, and you're going to tell me who the Christ figure is. And it goes like this. I have to take my glasses, so I can't tell this one. It goes like this. In a faraway country, across the ocean, at the top of a hill, inside an old castle, down the hall, in the kitchen,
over by the sink under the table sat a little boy. And there was a terrible problem with the little boy. He thought he was a turkey. People say that one day in that castle, the king invited all his important ministers in for a banquet, and they had a wonderful feast. And at the end of the feast, the king stood up and he made a speech, because that's what kings do. And he spoke about power and glory. And when he was done, you know what happened? Then the queen got up, and the queen, she said some stories too, and they were about grace and beauty. Wow, everybody was wowed. And then they looked to the prince. He's 13. He should be able to tell a story too, make a speech. Somebody just helped him, pushed him up on the table. Speech, they said. And he looked at all those people, those eyes staring at him, and he sort of turned white, and then he turned kind of red, and all of a sudden, he jumped off that table and tore out of that banquet room, and he went running down the hall, and as he ran down the hall, he ripped off his silk shirt, and he tore off his trousers, kicked off his shoes, and he started gobbling like a turkey. And he went all the way down to the kitchen, and he squatted under the table over by the sink, and he would not come out anymore. And he wouldn't eat normal food, and he wouldn't talk to anybody. He just went, blah, 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 blah. And he would peck at grain that the cooks would dribble down there on the floor for him. Well, you have to understand, he didn't want to be a turkey. It wasn't his idea. But when he thought about all the stuff a person like him would have to do when he grew up to be king, he knew he couldn't do it. And he knew that turkeys didn't have to be king. So no speeches, no nothing. He's just going to be a turkey. Well, the king and the queen, they were really distressed. They called in doctors. They called in monks. They called in sages. They called in nurses. And everybody had an idea. They fed that poor little boy green medicine. Stinky stuff. Ugly things. You got to eat this and you got to do that. He just totally ignored them. He's wah, 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 wah. And they couldn't do a thing with him. And finally, the king and the queen, they were in despair. It's like, what are we going to do? We want a boy. We don't want a turkey. Well, one day, it was pretty gloomy in that castle. And one day, this strange man came walking up the hill. He had a tattered coat on. He had a really crazy hat on. And his face shone like a new star. And when he was brought to the king, he said, I hear you have a son who is not well. Could I try to heal him? Well, the king said, we have nothing to lose. Help yourself. So, that healer walked down the hall and he stood in the doorway. And for 3 days, he said nothing. He just observed the lonely, strange life of the turkey prince. And on the third day, to everybody's surprise, he howled and shrieked. And he tore off his coat, and he kicked off his shoes, and ripped his pants to pieces. And he went down there, and he sat under the table right next to the turkey prince. And the turkey prince looked at him and said, who are you? And what right do you have to be here with me under this table? Well, the healer said, I'm surprised you can't tell. I'm a turkey just like you. Ah, you're a turkey just like me. The prince was so pleased that he had company. They sat there and they chatted and they ate grain that the cooks threw down to them. And the king and the queen were watching from the doorway, and they were like, you know, he's still acting like a turkey, but he's at least talking and he doesn't look as miserable as he's been the last few days. Well, that went on for a while, but it was cold. It was wintertime. And when the cooks left the kitchen and the wood stoves kind of cooled down, it got chilly being under the table like that.
Well, one night, the healer said, "Watch this." And he got up from out of that table and he went over and he got his tattered coat, big old coat, wrapped it around him, and he came back and sat down under the table. And the turkey prince looked him up and down and said, "What? You're wearing a coat. What's the deal? You're a turkey." The healer said, "Look, I know who I am. I'm a turkey who is cold. I'm going to wear this coat. It's all right." "Oh," thought the prince, "I'm cold too." And he got out from under the table and he went over to the cloakroom, got himself a nice big furry coat with a big collar, wrapped himself in it, and they enjoyed themselves a lot more because they weren't so cold anymore. Well, the next night, they were chatting in their warm coats, and the healer said to the turkey prince, he said, "You know what? It's going to be a long time till they throw grain down for us to peck at. I'm hungry. Watch this." And he got out from under the table, and he went over to the big table here, and he went to the icebox, and he got out a big chunk of cheese, yellow cheese, and he slabbed off a piece. And he had a big piece of rye bread over here. He slabbed that off, put the cheese on the bread. Honk! Took a bite. And it was good. "What are you doing?" said the turkey prince. "Turkeys don't eat bread, and they don't eat cheese." "I know who I am. I'm a turkey who's hungry for bread and cheese, and I'm going to have some." That's an amazing idea. And the turkey prince thought he'd try it too, slabbed himself off some cheese and a piece of bread, and they both sat there eating their cheese and bread. It was wonderful. Well, it wasn't too long until the healer got that prince to get out from under the table and move around the castle and wear clothes like normal people do. They even went outside the castle, went walking through the village down at the bottom of the mountain. The prince saw other little boys and girls. He saw sick people. He saw old people, young people, all kinds of people. He looked, and they walked. They went on a big trip. They went through forests. They went across deserts. And the prince learned how to find water in dry places. And he learned how to find a smile on a sad child's face. And he learned how to build a bridge to get across places that you couldn't get across otherwise. They were gone for months, and when they finally got back from that wonderful trip, the healer came to the king and queen and he said, "I've done everything I can for your son. Here he is. He loves his life again. And I must be on my way." Well, you know what the king did? Well, he got a big bag of gold and said, "Here, this is for you. And I have a brand new coat. You don't have to wear your tattered coat anymore." And they gave him an even more ridiculous hat than the one he had before. And all the gratitude and thanks that a healthy family could possibly give. He said goodbye and he went on his way. Well, time moved on, and the prince grew up, and his parents became old, and they died and were buried. And then the prince became the turkey king. And he was a wonderful king. He'd go out and walk. He loved walking. And he'd go to this village or that one, and he'd talk to the people, and sometimes he'd make a speech. And he'd make a speech. He'd talk about redemption.
and kindness. His people loved him. And after he'd be done talking, they'd come up to say things to him. It's like, we need help, or this or that, or the road needs fixed, or whatever it was, they'd tell him, and he'd try to help them. One day, after he did this thing at a little village, he saw a couple, and they looked like they were really having a hard time. They looked distressed. Couples do that sometimes. You can tell. I know this. When they came up to him, it was their turn. He said, what can I do to help you? You look distressed. And the man said, I don't think you can do anything for us. But the woman said, it's awful. We have this son. He's 13 years old. And he thinks he's a turkey. Take me to him at once, said the turkey king. And the couple led him down around the little alley to their little house. And said, here's where we live. And they opened the door and he looked in. And over there in the kitchen, over by the sink, under the table, sat their little son. There he was. And to everyone's astonishment, the king threw off his velvet cloak, tossed his gold crown down, kicked off his wonderful boots, and with a walked right over there and got under the table and sat right next to that little boy. And you know what that little boy did? He looked at him and he said, just who do you think you are? And what right do you have to be here under the table with me? You know what that turkey prince said? He said, I'm surprised you can't tell. I'm a turkey just like you. That's the turkey prince, and it's been told in a lot of different ways. The guy who told it when I heard it first, his name was Izzy Tuwinski. And Izzy loves to juggle, and he always juggles before he tells his story. And that's when I decided I have to learn to juggle too. And I did. It was hard work, but it was worth it. So now what we have to do, even though it's late, we have to check. We have to see what's going on here. So that guy with whose face glowed like a star, who was a healer, he came and he was trying to heal, but what was going on? Was the turkey prince ill? No. I'm going to get a second opinion over here. Was he, no? You're saying no too. Okay, he agrees with you. He wasn't ill. So what did he need a healer for? Okay, so he wasn't ill like I am, like I think. His throat was okay. That wasn't why he gobbled like a turkey. I mean, I kind of sound like a turkey because I can't talk right. But I'm going to say he might have been ill in a different way than we usually think about. He was maybe ill in his head because he had a lot of hard things going on in his life. And I tell you, if you ever get put on top of a table with 200 people staring at you without any warning, and you're supposed to make a speech, you might start thinking you're a turkey too. That's pretty hard, I'm telling you. So he had a problem, a big problem, and it was like something went wrong in his head. And he needed a healer, even if his body wasn't sick. And the wonderful thing is, in many ways, that's the way Jesus comes to us. We walk along and we think we are well, but we're actually sick. We're not thinking right. We think this is what the world's about. And Jesus comes and shows us, no, we need to get out from under the table and stop packing grain and eat bread and cheese and play with our friends and act like normal people. That's what that's about.
So I think all of you in the front rows know that if you see some child or someone your age, and you're having a hard time sitting in a corner and they feel like a turkey, you know the thing to do is to go sit with them and help them out. And it might not be by giving them a big lecture. Their mom and dad will do that, so you don't have to worry about that. But maybe just sitting with them is a good thing to do. So that's the stories for this evening. And there's a little bit of sickness and a little bit of health in there. And thank you for listening. And I'll give it over to you, and you can close as you wish.